Hello writers, this is the second video in the series all about self-publishing. I hope you enjoy it.
Self-publishing definitely has some quirks. Mm-hmm. Especially, again, there are very African or South African quirks to self-publishing. We'll chat about a little later on, for example, how to collect income as a South African, or things like, if you've written a book in a traditional language, how do you get that out to the world? Because that's things that, there's not a huge amount of resources out there talking about sort of our plight as, publishers or authors from South Africa.
Absolutely. Okay. I'm going to go on to a few more, like more self-publishing specific questions, if we can look at that, but, just some things. Okay. So for a author who traditionally publishes, in South Africa, we can approach the publisher directly. Okay, so I don't need an agent. Internationally, most of the time, you would need an agent. Is there ever a scenario where a self-published author would need to have an agent?
So I think you might actually know this a bit more about this than me. But in my mind, the only time a self-publishing author would need an agent is if they were considering the transition, or potentially a hybrid publishing model. Because exactly as you point out, South Africa does have a bit of a weird way with agents, where we are allowed to approach publishers directly, and that alludes to what we said earlier, where publishers get flooded, where the rest of the world, you have to go through someone else who then takes a percentage of royalties, but potentially gets that, that lucrative book deal for you. So I think the only time I've ever heard of approaching an agent is where someone was considering making the step from self-publishing to the traditional side.
Okay, cool. No, it's always so interesting for me when you read the thank yous in the back of the book is how many authors thank their agents. And then you always kind of think, at what point would there be a value? But obviously they speak the contractual languages, they have the relationship with the authors, with the publishers and the authors. So I think it's a very interesting gap to fill.
And I'm sure the agent also fulfills a bit of an advice role, an advisory role where they don't just broker the deal, but they probably give the author quite a bit of advice on, again, mm-hmm. the business side of the book in terms of, shaping it a little better to fit the market.
Okay. No, absolutely. I mean, they're thanked in every book. Okay. Copyright. Let's talk about that. Who owns what?
Yes. Copyright. Let me think about the phone call, which is hilarious here is I think, when authors realize they don't necessarily always own what's being created. Mm-hmm. And so when it comes to the traditional side, anything that's created, so things that are created are things like the cover, the final cover files, things like the typeset interior, the print ready interior files, things like the ebook files, for example. And at some point, a lot of authors are surprised because they find out during the process that they don't actually have access to these files that they might want. So maybe you're doing a little bit of branding and you need access to your book cover file or your book interior file to grab a font or to grab an image or a logo. And you're told, no, you don't actually own that file. And if you want access to that file, you need to pay a little something extra. And so the traditional side, your hands are fairly tied. And this will depend mostly on the contract you sign. So depending on what you agree to with the publisher ahead of time, that kind of decides who owns what. What I can say with the contract, and you can totally stop me if I'm off the mark, but most publishers, if you don't stop them, they go for the throat. So most publishers in that contract, if you don't stop them and say, I actually want to tweak a few things inside you, they're going to go for the best deal for them. And, I guess it makes sense in a way. Now, that means, again, that the things that are created, you might not own. The cover, the interior, the ebook. You'll own the original wording, but not the final layouts of whatever was designed, whatever cover was laid out, and things like that. Self-publishing is the opposite. Self-publishing, essentially, you've paid for a service, you own what comes out the other side. Mm-hmm. So a cover design, a typesetting process, an ebook process, you should be able to email your partner, your team, and go, guys, I want that cover file, please. And you should have full access to kind of break it open, tweak it, shape it, whatever the case might be. So self-publishing typically means that you own those files and copyright rests with the author. So self-publishing, no one else is listed as a publisher, you are. So the author's name is kind of appearing in the copyright page. the one distinction that's so important for an author to make is, although you might own, in the self-publishing sense, you might own the final file, you might own the cover or the interior that comes out the other side, it doesn't mean you have access to the designed file that was used to create it. And often where I encounter this is sort of where an author comes to me and says, well, I worked with this guy. I wasn't happy for whatever reason. I want your help, you know, whether it be cover or interior, for example. Now, you can't really give someone like a finished interior and say, here it is. I want you to work with it, but it's a PDF format that I'm going to give you. What I'll need, for example, is the Adobe InDesign file that, you know, was used to create that PDF. And now the author goes back to the designer and goes, I'd like that design file too, please. And then you might find resistance where a lot of designers go, okay, you own that final PDF, you own that final result we created, but not necessarily the ingredients that went into it. You know, so for example, the Adobe InDesign file. And what some authors find at this point is they're going to get a fee of some sort to get those design files from, you know, whichever person they might've used. The thing is, if you don't, if an author doesn't ensure that they have the design files for the cover and the design files for the interior, it means that any changes you might want to make down the road, whether it be an updated edition, whether you might want to fix mistakes you've made, whether, you know, you might want to just tweak something and acknowledge someone else, it's really difficult to do. It's really difficult for anyone in the publishing industry to work with the PDF as opposed to having the actual master design file ready. So typically copyright with self-publishing authors, they do own whatever's created, but they should really consider having a conversation with whoever they work with going, can I have access to these files too if I need, just to cover their bases.
Okay, good advice. You mentioned making mistakes, and that is a big argument against self-publishing, is that just a general lack of quality control. I always tell my students is the last thing you do is type the end, save a PDF and upload it to Amazon. Okay, there are definite steps in between. And I think that's what came out of the series was when I wrote the original post, I got so many questions about what happened. And, you know, working in the industry the whole time, you assume everyone knows this. So that's why I went back and went into detail with each of these steps. But just in terms of quality control for your manuscript, what do you recommend?
So obviously we're going to assume that the author's going through the self-publishing process. And any good process should include editing. So the reason self-publishing gets a bit of a bad name is because editing normally is the biggest expense an author is exposed to, and therefore the easiest they think to avoid. You know, so the most common objection I get to a sort of a recommended publishing process goes, well, I've edited myself. You know, I've got a degree, I'm super smart. You get extra points if you tell me about your family member who played a role and they super smart. And so editing typically is the service that gets left by the wayside, and that kind of feeds into the circle of self-publishing books are substandard. So a lot of advice can go into, well, how do you reduce the cost of editing before you're going to be giving your book to someone else? And I think you'll know, again, you'll have some cool advice there, but the advice from my side typically revolves around things like, well, print out the book. You know, reading the book aloud to yourself is a lot easier to identify mistakes than if you stick purely, for example of a computer screen. Something else would be, well, can you get a group of beta readers together? Can you get a bunch of people together, some who might know you well, but others maybe who don't, who can give you high-level feedback on what they see? So the risk with getting someone too close to you, someone in the same household, is that they know what you mean. They read a mistake and they go, ah, I know what he means. And without realizing it, they gloss over the mistake in the same way you did. So getting a bunch of people together, again, people who might not always know you that well, is a really good idea. And then comes the important role of finding your editor. And again, I think the importance of editing can't be overstated. What do you see from your side when it comes to how authors approach editing?
I am the world's worst proofreader and I'm a terrible typist. Okay. So for me, it's a non-negotiable. I mean, I know there is, I always tell my students and I have it myself is you need a writer's piggy bank. And I go open a bank account. Yeah, there's a R5 account at Nedbank. FNB has a R5 account. Capitec has a R5 account. Open one and put money in it every month. Okay. Because when you get to the editing, that's the one part we don't skip. And by editing also, that's something that you have to differentiate between. And that's something that you really have to tell your people is that an edit is not just an edit. Okay. There are different kinds of editing. What kind of editing are you looking for? And then ultimately there's editing and there's proofreading. Okay. So like a proofreader is someone who's going to purely spot mistakes, but they might not comment on there's a gap here. Something isn't making sense. What's going on here? So that's just something that they have to differentiate between. But yeah, it's something like that to me is just a step that I cannot skip even if I ever wanted to. And reading aloud is such great advice. I do it. My family think I'm totally crazy because I close the door and I whip the paper and we once upon a time. So that's definitely stuff that you can't skip and not do. So in terms of saving costs for editors is give the editor the best version of the manuscript you can. I agree with you that 100%. Do as much proofreading as you can. If you have a friend who is an editor or proofreader, by all means approach that friend. But the friend who did a semester of English Lit 10 years ago at varsity, they might not be as practiced as they were. I mean, proofreading is a skill. Editing is a skill. You have to work very, very hard at it and be on your game with it. So, you know, someone who used to do it once upon a time. Some people are just unusually good at spotting typos. I'm not. I would love to have a person like that in my life, but no, I pay for that service. So the writer's piggy bank is an important part of that.
I really like that. Budgeting towards the process ahead of schedule, that's a really cool way to handle it. And I think the most common myth I encounter when it comes to editing is the author who says, but I paid this editor next door, you know, a small amount to edit the book. So why is there still a mistake? You know, the myth of, well, it's been edited once, so it must be perfect. Yeah. And you and I both know that the sort of top authors, the best-selling authors, have their words edited again and again and again and again. It's never expect to have it edited once and then everything is perfect.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. No, it's your editing is such a big thing. And like you also spoke about beta readers. Be very careful who you give your manuscript to. Beta readers are great, but they need
to. Is it beta or beta?
Beta, I have no idea. Beta, beta, data, data.
I'm talking about that again.
Yeah, okay, all right. But yeah, beta readers, okay. So be careful who you give your manuscript to, okay? I mean, like, be honest, if you give your book to your mother, is your mother ever not going to say she loves it? Because every mother just loves to drop my daughter, the author. So just be very careful who you give that book to. Some people just feel too bad to say they don't like the book. But the worst feedback, and it's fine if people tell you they don't like the book, but the thing is they have to be able to tell you why and what they didn't like about the book. And someone who doesn't have writing experience, and someone who's never had to explain that to someone what they like or did not like, feedback is a very, very tricky thing to give. It is a skill that takes people years to hone, to learn why this didn't work, what this didn't do here. And it also depends on writers, from writer to writer. James Patterson writes short chapters and really, really fast chapters. And his stories are very in your face and close up and action packed. Other writers like Janet Fitch is a slow, beautiful scenes and they're gorgeous and she's descriptive. So her scenes will be much longer, whereas James Patterson's scenes are very much shorter. So you need to take into account the kind of writer, the pacing they put into it. Dan Brown writes a lot. He's got lots of words on the page, but he's got good pace. So he gets away with it. But so it's all kinds of things like that you have to be able to evaluate. So just be very careful who you give your manuscript to. That's
great.
2 cents worth on that. Okay.
No, I completely agree with you.
No, and it's such a personal thing getting feedback. So sometimes people can just, you know, and you also have to be ready to receive feedback. That's also a big step.
Yeah,
for an author.
If you give it to a good editor, you should expect firstly that your word count drops, you know, substantially. And to be open for some, you know, some fair criticism, because I know what I hear a lot as an objection is, but they're going to change my tone. And it's often an excuse an author uses to justify not paying for editing is that, well, you know, I've written in a certain way and I deliberately spell words wrong, but that's my tone, you know, and I don't want the editor to kind of you know, to kind of fiddle with that tone. And obviously most good editors will recognize tone. They'll recognize deliberately, you know, misspelled words and dialect and things like that. But unfortunately, most of the times I hear that it's when an author says, well, I don't want to edit because of, which is not great.
Editors should not rewrite. I've had that experience before where people rewrote sections of my manuscript, which that shouldn't happen. An editor looks at the work and can make suggestions for you to change it. So just be very careful of people letting rip, and because that's often what happens, especially if you give it to someone who's less experienced. They sometimes change it, and I say it's change for the sake of change. And it's just because it's not how they would have written it. So that's also a big thing to just keep in mind when you receive feedback or when you choose an editor. Ask them how is that handled. You can give them an example of what this should be or could be, but theoretically they shouldn't be changing your physical
manuscript. I completely agree. Yeah. It ties in beautifully with I think one of the things you and I wanted to chat about, which was what mistakes happen the most in the self-publishing process. So when it comes to self-publishing, I think because of the cost, which authors don't often expect, I think by far the biggest mistake is trying to cut corners. So an author says, oh, it cost what? Okay, well, I will get this edited by a friend. Okay, I will design my cover in Canva, which is a great platform, but not great for covers.
Canva.
Canva is stunning. I think it's easy for me to spot a cover that's been designed by the author. And I think for every author who says they've, for example, designed their own cover, I think 9 out of 10 have done a really bad job. And so that ties me to the second problem I encounter, where authors are so heavily invested in the creative process that they override expert advice. Mm-hmm. So when you come to a company like mine, like my ebook, and the author says, well, here's what I got. What do you think? You know, we will always take the author's, for example, cover input. We'll take things like the layout input. You know, we'll ask the author questions. But in the end, the final result we deliver is something that's always got what the author wanted mixed together with a degree of viability for the market. Meaning maybe these colors that you wanted don't work the best together. So we're going to recommend something a little different. And authors who sometimes are very creative, often say, well, something I hear really often is, well, my book is about, you know, X, Y, and Z. So the cover has to have this. The cover has to have this. There's got to be a church. There's got to be a heart. There's got to be a dove. And the author then overrides us. And typically where I deliver the work I'm least proud of is actually where the author interfered the most. Because running a business, I can't escape the fact that the customer's right. You know, the customer's always right. And so if an author says to me, I want it this way because I just do, and that's how it's going to be done. Okay. You'll get that cover. But honestly, it typically the covers that I, you know, that I've disliked the most and correspondingly have bad sales have been where the creative author struggles to let go of the process and go, okay, you know better. Here's what I'm looking for. You tell me kind of what works with that. That's probably the second most important point, followed by not thinking of your writing as a business. So most authors are so heavily involved in one product. You know, you spent a year, 2 years inside one product that this one product is all you can see. And so most authors don't zoom out and go, okay, I'm starting a business. You know, being an author is running a business and a book is a product. And so where am I selling my product? How am I positioning my product? Who am I selling my product to? Otherwise worded as, who is your ideal reader? And these are the conversations I love, because I'm not as creative as you are when it comes to, for example, the awesome stuff you write. What I love is I love the business side of writing, where I say, listen, you've got a great book and that's a beginning. But let's talk about the rest of an author's responsibilities when it comes to the marketing, the branding, the distribution and things like that. And typically, that's what authors, they don't invest anywhere as much time into that as they do the actual book, you know, content itself. And by the time they've actually published a book and they then zoom out and go, oh, how should I market? You know, by then you've already missed that, that sort of that period of around 30 days or so where you are able to make a very big splash with the launch.
Okay. Lots to think about, geez. And you always think the writing the book's the hard part. Okay, let's quickly talk platforms. Besides Amazon, which is obviously the big one, are there any other platforms? What do you recommend? What do you think?
Yeah, Amazon is definitely the big one. So everyone knows Amazon's market share is something above, I think, 2/3. When I say 2/3, obviously I'm speaking about the kind of first world US market. Because not many people pay attention to us SAFRs down here in the tip of Africa. So I think the first realization an author needs to have is that, yeah, Amazon actually will help us. Amazon will take books from South African authors. We do have to kind of piggyback on the Amazon platform, meaning Amazon.com, meaning we're pricing in dollars. So, Amazon is an option. It's the biggest option, and it should definitely be inside every author's arsenal. Now, being South Africans, we have a very unique take on Amazon where sometimes I hear people say, oh, they're a bully. Oh, I don't like them. I don't want to publish with them. And it is so important as an author to remove your personal biases, because although you might not like some of their practices, you can't cut off your nose to spite your face. Is throwing out the baby with the bathwater also appropriate phrase to use there? So even though you might not like them, they are the biggest, meaning as South Africans and actually as an author in general, you have to be there. The other platforms out there hold smaller market share. And so they're more important for an author who says, well, I want to sort of maximize my profits. So for an author who says, which is actually most authors who say, I'm really busy, I've got a full-time job, this writing thing, I want to get started, I want to get into it, but I want to see how it goes. So I'm not quite doing this full-time yet. I might want to, but not just yet. Amazon, that's where you need to be. For the author who says, well, actually, I want to do this as a business. I've got maybe more than one book. Maybe what I've written is actually tied to my career. So I sell trucks and my book is about trucks. So therefore, getting better exposure and distribution for the book makes absolute sense because it's tied to a business behind the book. Then you want to be on other platforms. So Amazon lets you sell direct to customers. There is another platform, Kobo, which will let you sell direct to customers. There's Barnes & Noble, which unfortunately is not accessible from Africa. There's Apple, which you can publish to. Typically, they would not allow you to publish if you did not own an Apple. I think recently that has changed. But to save the author's sanity, the way I recommend an author gets into all these other shops, if they want maximum distribution, is to go through a middleman platform. So instead of going to Apple and then Kobo and then Barnes & Noble and then Scribd and all these other stores individually, and like I say, some of them won't let you as South Africans or Africans, is to go through a smashwords.com or a draft2digital.com, which is a single platform that'll take your ebook and sort of do a shotgun approach to marketing distribution and get you into several stores. And all these stores then give feedback in terms of royalties to the single platform, which then pays the author. So typically, number one, be on Amazon, no matter how you feel about Amazon. Number two, I think, is if you want to go super wide, be lazy and go through a distribution platform like Smashwords or D2D, Draft Digital. Make sure that where you can go direct to Amazon, you go direct to Amazon. Because Amazon's the biggest, you don't necessarily want to share some of that pie with the middleman platform like Smashwords. So go direct to Amazon and then go for all the other stores through the middleman platform. And what I hear from South African authors a lot is well, where can I sell my book in South Africa? And I don't know how far your memory goes back, but can you recall the old Kalahari? What's Kalahari.net, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that used to be Old Faithful for South Africans. That used to be the only platform that would actually talk to self-publishing authors. There's been several that have come and come and gone over the years. Kalahari has kind of morphed into takealot.com. And so a lot of authors want to get their book on takealot.com. But I don't like recommending that to authors, because why would you want to go to Takealot, for example, when Amazon reaches into South Africa? So when you can actually pull all your sales into the Amazon platform, and it has benefits when you keep all your eggs in the Amazon basket for the ebook version, why would you want to try sell an ebook through Takealot, for example? So you can go there, absolutely. But I would recommend, and I prefer going international, which South African readers have the choice of buying, through Amazon, for example.
Okay, we'll look at that. That's interesting stuff. Another question that always comes up with self-publishing is print on demand. When should you and when shouldn't you? Because let's go back to the box of boxes and boxes of books in the office.
Yeah, I think as soon as you said print on demand, a whole bunch of people went, what? Print on demand? So many, many, many moons ago, your options as an author, when you went to the printer and you said, hey, printer, I want some books, please. The printer would dictate the quantity to you. They would say, well, it's cheaper for us to print 1,000 books or 2,000 books or 3,000 books. The problem, obviously, is if you find a mistake in the books, if you want to do an update to the cover in the books, if you want to release a new version and not have stock of that book kind of sitting and gathering dust. So that arrangement of large quantities benefited mostly the printer, and the author was kind of left behind. Now, print on demand is an answer for an author who doesn't want to suffer through those problems. So print on demand is essentially where one reader in any country around the world can order a copy of your book, a physical book, and then someone else handles the printing and the shipping of that book to that reader, and the author does not lift a finger. The author can, be playing golf on a golf course, where I'm living in the States, in Europe, and in South Africa, and I can hop on Amazon, for example, which is the print-on-demand platform of choice at the moment, and I can order a single copy, 10 copies, 100 copies of your paperback and have it shipped to my location. So the technology is firstly new to South Africans. People just didn't know this thing existed. And the beauty of it is there's some upfront cost you have to pay to get your book ready for Amazon, obviously. That doesn't just happen. But once your book is up, it just sells. It just sells. And people can order the ebook copy at no cost to you, the author. And people can now order the paperback copy where Amazon will print it and ship it from their printing factories in Europe and America, for example, and the author can just get paid. So it's a beautiful technology that answers many authors' frustrations.
It does sound like a nice solution. And it's always, I love ebooks and I read ebooks all the time, but there's just something about a physical book in your hand, which is just awesome.
I hear that so often. It's a very South African, South Africanism, where readers go, I'll never change. It's physical all the way. And I have to kind of take the author and go, because the author often uses that as a reason not to make an ebook. And I have to take the author and go, yes, that's you, but your readers are somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And your readers might love technology, even if you don't. So for the more the authors who are slightly older, they go, well, I don't get this ebook thing. I'll never read ebook. So I'm not going to bother with, getting an ebook created. And again, you're cutting off your potential readership from, the whole world just to your local bookshop because of your biases, which is silly.
I love buying a book at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's the best thing in the world. Book one finished, book two downloaded, let's start.
How much coffee have you had?
reading is a bit of a problem, but it's okay. We'll get there. So far, we've spoken mostly about, just in general about the self-publishing thing, but in terms of South Africa and our multiple languages and writing in your mother tongue and selling on an international, which is always primarily English market, what would you recommend?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things being a writer from within Africa or South Africa as well. One of the most important questions is, okay, so English is cool, but I don't speak English as a first language. I've got a book which is not, it might be Zulu, Xhosa. How do I get this out? How do I kind of get to online readers with the book I have now? Firstly, Amazon is a little bit fuzzy. So Amazon surprisingly will take Afrikaans, but no other traditional sort of South African or African languages. The reason when I did ask why you won't support Zulu, for example, was that I was told that they need teams of reviewers. so that when your book comes through, Amazon has to kind of take a look to make sure that what you're submitting is not complete junk or, you know, full of explicit content or whatever the case is. So they need people who speak the language to review the book and kind of go, yeah, that's cool. And so they said, yeah, we want to do that. We want to support those languages, but it's going to be a little bit of time before we can. The cool thing is, so Amazon aside, there are other platforms which welcome different languages. Mm-hmm. So typically where a writer comes to me and says, listen, I've got a book in Zulu or another language that Amazon doesn't support, I will then get you online into different shops outside of Amazon. So those middleman platforms I mentioned earlier, for example, Smashwords or Drafted Digital, they allow the different languages. So it means you can put your Zulu book up, for example, and get that published. It doesn't mean that every partner shop of theirs will support it. So for example, mm-hmm. let's say they get your book into Apple, potentially. It doesn't mean that Apple might support the Zulu book, but there's going to be some shops which support it. And what that means as the author is you're able to get an online book ready for readers. It might not be sold through Amazon, but if you're okay selling through a different shop that does the same job, there are options for writers from Africa who write in languages other than English, you know, for example.
I hope you learned a lot. I have included contact details in the titles of these posts. If you have any questions for myself or for Dave, do not hesitate to ask.